your dadgum government, you sorry so-and-sos. You got your damn hands in every pocket of my clothes. Well, you dadgum, dadgum, dadgum government. Uh-huh. Oh, don't you know? Oh, don't you love them sometimes? Uh-huh. Well, you dadgum government, you better pay attention. You're setting up there like a fool's convention. Will you dadgum, dadgum, dadgum government? Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Oh, don't you know?
Hey, welcome everyone to the Rebel Madman here at Republic Broadcasting. And I'm here today in Travelers Rest, South Carolina, with fellow host Stephen Whitener and some folks from other channels and what have you. And we're doing a program here today at a location called Fall for Dixie in Travelers Rest. And we are having a fantastic time, a real good get together. Just spoke with a group of young people here from Clemson University. And if we are beginning to get the truths of history into the universities of America by whatever means possible, I think we are doing one heck of a job. Well, the thing about what Fall for Dixie celebrates is the fact of the Confederacy itself. And my two favorite points of history happen to be the founding era, constitutional era, and the wall between the states, or as Stonewall Jackson referred to it, our second war for independence. And I was thinking in one of my presentations earlier today here at the program, I made the comment, a quote from, and I'll probably butcher it a little bit, but my quote from none other than Lysander Spooner, when he said that a person, he said a man, but I'm going to say a person here, proper pronouns. You got no idea how hard that is to do. But any person who is forced to live under a government they do not want is a slave. And there are going to be people who immediately conjure up, black folks picking cotton. And that is what they don't, they go, oh, that's slave. Well, the point of it is there are two kinds of slaves. There are physical slaves, P-H-Y-S-I-C-A-L, which has to do with physical enslavement or someone owning you and governing your every move every day. And then there is fiscal slavery, which is F-I-S-C-A-L. And fiscal slavery is financial slavery for someone who controls your property, who controls your ability to use your property for your own benefit. And, of course, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 of the U.S. Constitution made everyone a fiscal slave, because Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 gives to the government unlimited taxation from unlimited sources for an unlimited amount. May have been redundant there. I apologize for that. But that is where we are sitting today, and most people don't want to understand because, you know, the one thing I would like to ask all you folks and give it some thought is if, recently the government has been announcing all of the money that has been sent to the Ukraine. Well, my question to you as an American citizen, American society, would be, did they get your permission before they took your money that you worked hard for and gave it to someone you don't even know? And the second point about that is, considering it's our government, and all governments are an empire of lies, this one especially. So here is the question, what clarification or certification do you have that that money was actually sent to the Ukraine? All you have is to take their word for it. And so how much money of this national debt has been accumulated through wars over the years? I mean, we're $30-some trillion in debt right now, and that doesn't even count even close to the unfunded mandates, health care, and a lot of others that are unfunded. So were the people of the South fighting for slavery? That is what we are all told, and that is something we've discussed here today. Were they fighting to retain slavery? They didn't need to fight to retain slavery because slavery was constitutional. It was written into the Constitution. The South did not need to secede to have slaves. They were already there, and it was constitutional. And not only that, but we have the Corwin Amendment, which was proposed in the Congress and was actually passed by both houses of Congress and sent to the states for ratification. Now, if you will read the Corwin Amendment states that they would keep the institution of slavery in perpetuity outside of the control of Congress. So all the South had to do if they wanted to maintain slavery was to drop their secession and come back into the Union and sign the Corwin Amendment. And then we have the Emancipation Proclamation, and we've talked about that today. Well, the Emancipation Proclamation, all it did was to free the slaves in the South where Abraham Lincoln had no control. But it kept in servitude, kept in bondage, all of the slaves in the border states, which there were three, and within the North. The North did not outlaw slavery until the 13th Amendment. So if you wanted, the only thing that was required to own slaves in 1860, 1861, and to maintain your ownership of slaves was to stay in the Union. So to say that the war was fought because the South wanted to maintain their slaveries is one of the most blatant lies in U.S. history. That has to be easy to discern. But the Marxist down at the local gulag we call schools is not going to tell you the truth about that because it doesn't fit the lesson. It doesn't fit the lesson plan. It doesn't fit the paradigm. So when we look at the issue of the Civil War, and let's also look at the banning of almost everything Southern and the desecration of graves and the tearing down of monuments. And the desecration of graves includes digging up people like Nathan Bedford Forrest and his wife, digging them up and removing them and removing the statue. What kind of people engages in that? What kind of people thinks it's okay to do that? That, to me, is very, very troubling. And I know you've been taught differently. Almost everyone has been taught differently. They've been taught a different type of history. You know, and oh, the South was, you know, they were so bad, you know, and they were doing all of these things. But how many of you have ever gone into state archives or national archives and looked at exactly what happened during that time frame to so many people? Look at it and see especially what happened to the people who were called free blacks in the South. And you're probably saying, oh, my teacher didn't tell me there were any free blacks in the South. I didn't know there was any such thing. Well, I was just talking with a group of, as I said before, the students from Clemson. And I said, how many of you from South Carolina and here at a university in South Carolina have ever heard of William Ellison? And they were like, no, I don't think I've ever heard of him. I said, you've never been taught about William Ellison? No. Well, William Ellison was one of the five richest men in the state of South Carolina in 1860. He owned somewhere in the neighborhood of 60 to 80 slaves. He was a top-notch businessman. He made and he repaired cotton gins. He learned to create cotton gins, and he could build his own which were in high demand. He had quite a bit of business going in South Carolina when the war broke out. William Ellison was black. Bet you didn't know that. He actually bought Confederate bonds to support the Confederate military. He had a son that served in the Confederate Army. But, gosh, we can't tell you that because that kind of explodes the entire narrative, doesn't it? It just really rips apart what we've been taught. And if you've been taught lies, and, you know, if you hear a lie often enough, Joseph Goebbels tells us that if you hear a lie often enough and it's repeated often enough, the people will believe it. Well, in essence, that's what we're dealing with in America. Because people have been taught these lies over and over and over again, and they believe them. And they then form opinions about what should be done with other people's property. What makes anyone in America think that they have a right to tear down a statue that people put up 100 years ago? What makes you think that, yes, I've learned something. I'm really smart now. I've learned something, so I want you people to tear these monuments down because they were monuments to those dastardly Confederates. Well, you know, here's another thing that we were talking about on a previous radio show here today. And that was with the slavery issue, with so many other issues of that nature. And we have to ask ourselves, again, why do we form opinions on this? Why do we form policy based on lies? And let's stop and think about something that was very prevalent. And we talked about the Great Revival in the Confederate Army in late 1862, early 1863. Thousands of soldiers who were in winter bivouac went through a religious experience that was brought about by especially Stonewall Jackson, who paid $700 to bring in a chaplain of the Confederacy. And we compare that with, is there any records of the Northern soldiers ever having a religious experience, a revitalization for that matter? But what were the Southerners, what were the Northerners doing in the South? Well, here's going to be one that's going to be really hard for you to understand, but what is a contraband camp? When the Union Army moved in and occupied places like the coast of North and South Carolina, like the coast of Florida, like some places in Virginia, like some places in Tennessee, and especially New Orleans, what was done with the free blacks? What was done with free blacks who owned slaves? But into contrast, and to show into contrast the moral element and the fact of what was actually taking place with these people over and over and over again, as we look at actual history. And here is one of the points that I wanted to make, especially, was that I read some official documents from the Etowah Historical Society about what was happening in certain parts of Georgia, where I live. And the Etowah Historical Society had letters that were written by people who were alive in 1861 to 1865 and then on into Reconstruction. Now, that is a firsthand account of what people put down was happening to them during this time. And one of the things that seemed to be so very, very terrible, at least in my eyes, was how many of the women of the South were raped and brutalized, including in the Battle of Athens, Alabama, a Mrs. McCulloch. Now, folks, these are in the National Archives in the 129 volumes of The War of the Rebellion, the official records. These are official records kept by the Union Army. So why would the Union Army lie about doing this? And one was in Athens, Alabama, there was a Mrs. McCulloch. And when the Union Army came riding in, she and others in Athens, Alabama, turned their back on these people and said, "No, we're not even going to look at you when you come in Union Army, come into our town." Well, the leader of the unit that went into Athens, Alabama, was not even an American citizen. He was Russian, but he was in command of that unit because he was close friends with Karl Marx, and Karl Marx was close friends with Charles A. Dana, who was the Assistant Secretary of War, and who was, as I said, a close friend of Karl Marx. So here we have Turchin, which was his adopted name, Turgayevich or something like that was his Russian name. And so he tells his soldiers, "I am going out for a couple of hours. When I come back, I don't want to see a house standing here." Well, I think, again, her name was Ms. McCulloch. She was pregnant. The thing that happened to her that day was the fact that she was brought out into the street and raped repeatedly until she miscarried and eventually bled to death and died. Now, that's your Union Army. There are so many instances of that, so very many instances that are documented in those official War of the Rebellion, to how especially the women were treated. One black lady in South Carolina wrote, she was free, but she wrote that she had recently had a child die. And she had buried that child a couple of weeks before the Yankee Army came through. Well, the soldiers of the Yankee Army would look at graveyards because that's where a lot of the Confederates would hide their gold and silver, a lot of the people who had it, to keep it from being stolen by the renegades in the Union Army. Well, the Union Army people in this neck of the woods in Georgia looked at that grave and thought, "Oh, they've hidden their valuables here. We'll dig it up." So they dug it up, found the casket, the small wooden casket, opened it up. There was a dead body of a child in there. They dumped it out on the ground and left it for the mother to walk back and see. That was the moral decay of the Union Army. And again, many in the Union Army were not even U.S. citizens. And there were Union Army elements where they did not even speak English. Imagine that. What if you today in your hometown and it was invaded by an army because they wanted to collect money from your taxes and you didn't want to pay it, and so they invaded your particular state, your particular city, your particular county, and they invaded it, and when they did, they came in, they raped the women, they burned the houses. But what if they didn't even speak English? What would be your thoughts towards such an army, towards such a military? Would you praise them as the great emancipators, the people who freed the blacks? And one of the things that is really, really startling is when we talk about these contraband camps. A lot of blacks did flee the plantations and other places, and they went to be near the Union Army because the Union Army represented to them what they thought was freedom. So they gathered there. Well, looks like we got some music coming in here. All right, folks. Thank you very much, Rebel Madman. We'll be back with you at the end of the break.
Consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, Sierra Madre Precious Metals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret. .com SusannaSecret.com.
Yankee letter said that they'd be coming any day, and if you planned on getting out alive, best be on our way. Our tattered gray was torn between if we should run or fight, but our southern pride swelled up inside as we dug in for the night. Then I heard a rider calling.
And that is what we're experiencing here today at the Dixie Fall for Dixie program, and with a lot of wonderful folks here, and we're talking about Southern history, and it's just absolutely fantastic for RBN to allow me to be a part of their program. And this is one of the things I want you folks to do, is to find some way to support this platform. This platform is critical to the survival of freedom of speech. And RBN needs your support, because who else is doing this? Who else is putting out the truth out there? Very few. Well, let me read something, then I know we have a caller, and then we'll take the caller, but I just wanted to read something. And I'm going to lead that off with the Lysander Spooner quote. Any person made subject to a government they do not want is a slave. The colonists did not want the government of King George III. The people of the South did not want the Marxist government of Abraham Lincoln. Every state which did not secede was allowed to keep the institution of slavery and did so throughout the war. Free border states which did not secede were invaded militarily to prevent secession. Not sure what happened to that fabled 10th Amendment in that instance. Over 3 years after the beginning of the war, West Virginia was unconstitutionally admitted to the Union as a slave state. And you will say, how unconstitutionally? Article 4, Section 4. Six. My sixth point in this one is tens of thousands of innocent white Southern civilians and hundreds of thousands of innocent blacks, free and slave, died at the hands of the Union Army, either by murder or gross neglect. Harriet Jacobs, an ex-slave turned author and reformer, boarded a train in Philadelphia and headed south. Like many others at the train station, Jacobs was on her way to Washington, D.C. to support the war effort. Her mission was to visit freed slaves who had migrated to the Capitol and then to report on their condition to the Northern Reform Abolition Movement. In describing her journey to William Lloyd Garrison, the famed abolitionist and editor of the famous newspaper titled The Liberator, she wrote, and it was published there, and I quote, "I reached the Capitol without molestation," unquote. The morning after her arrival, she went to Duff Green's Row, a government contraband camp for newly emancipated slaves. Here is her quote, and it's also in her article. It says, "I found men, women, and children all huddled together without any distinction or regard to age or sex. Some of them were in the most pitiable condition. Many were sick with measles, diphtheria, scarlet, and typhoid fever. Some had a few filthy rags to lie on. Others had nothing but the bare floor for a couch." She then described what appeared to be a hospital. Yet, quote, "there was no matron, nothing or no one at hand to administer to the comfort of the sick and dying. There were some days as many as 10 deaths reported at this place in 24 hours. As she talked to a few of the patients and offered them clothing, blankets, and kind words, she soon realized that the military and government officials who had organized the camp knew how badly the freed people were suffering and in essence ignored them. She went on to state that there was no one among the freed people, and I quote, to soothe the last agonies of death," unquote. In Army hospitals, she said, chaplains and nurses comforted dying soldiers, offering them a prayer and a promise to contact their families. But there was no one by the sides of the sick and dying freed black people. And she stated, as she bent down to adjust a blanket to offer a reassuring word, they looked up at her with tearful eyes and asked, "Is this freedom?" Unquote. Well, I'll let you answer that question. And her name again, I took that directly from Harriet A. Jacobs, Life Among the Contrabands. That was published in The Liberator on September the 5th, 1862. Ooh, there comes that beautiful music again. We'll be right back with you, folks. Rebel Madman Radio. Republic of
destruction over 50 miles abreast, marching to the sea, leaving nothing in their path. Factory farms and churches, nothing spared their wrath.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org. and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Used to be Andy and Barney Fife. Now a tired Stern and a brothel life. Too much crap drive the world insane. Everybody singing the jailhouse blues.
Wonderful hag, Earl Haggard. What America, what happened? Well, I hope we're trying to delve into that. I think we have a caller from Washington. Go ahead, Dan. Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't see the first one. John, go ahead, sir.
Okay, well, I want to give you a little background. My father was brought to Detroit from Pittsburgh, Kansas in 1925 on a wagon with two mules. My mother went from Warren County, Tennessee to Detroit. So I'm a northerner with southern blood. The whole time I was in Michigan till age 36, I never felt at home. So at 36, I packed my family up, and my parents by that time were getting some age. They said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going home." I never felt like I was where I should be when I was in Michigan. Long story short, fast forward 25 years, and I've got family that have moved down here. Family members that are in construction that, when Dave Ramsey, the famous rich guy, was building some buildings, were equipment operators digging up mass graves. Well, come to find out, it was men, women, and children that were buried in mass graves as a result of, I believe, the Battle of Franklin. So what you're saying about the Northern soldiers, for anyone that doubts it, folks, it's true. There were people in Nashville. They burned much of Nashville. We hear about Atlanta, but Nashville was actually set on fire as well. A lot of people died in this area. In fact, when I go up to a place called Gallatin, which is north of Nashville, Tennessee, even when I, before I knew the history, as a Christian, I couldn't stand it. When I would go into Gallatin, could not stand it. And I know, as ridiculous as it may sound, the blood was crying out from the ground. I could not stand it. And even now, to go to Gallatin or to Franklin, I get this feeling in the pit of my stomach. I folks, it's real. You know, we hear history, and the history is written by a bunch of liars. There were more slaves. Harriet Tubman, the famous slave emancipator, was actually going doing the Underground Railroad in the North, taking slaves to Canada. So if it was about slavery, why was she evacuating blacks to Canada? You've got to ask yourself, have you been lied to?
Great
point,
John.
I'd like to hear your comments.
Well, my comment is I am very familiar with the Gallatin, Tennessee area and some of the atrocities. I plan to do that on a future program. But some of the travesties committed by the Union Army, and again, this is from the official records kept by the Union Army that wasn't Southern. They kept records of their own massacres and what they allowed to happen. And the thing that was so critical to me in these, and I have seen the soil cry out as well, John, I promise you. Very good comment. And I hope you don't mind, John, but we've got some other callers.
Can I make one other comment very quickly? Okay.
Please.
Nashville, Tennessee, you know, it's a great place according to entertainment. But I would beg people to look at Revelation, and I can't remember the church that it was being addressed, but it was the Nicolaitan church, or the Nicolaitan, however you pronounce that, the things that God hated. That's Nashville, Tennessee. I believe Nashville, Tennessee is where Satan's seat is. I feel like I'm inside the walls of Jericho as a Christian. I really do.
Well, John, thank you so much. Thank you so much, and I appreciate your call. Call again soon. And can we move to our gentleman in Washington now, please?
Yeah, I'm here. Real quick, yeah. On the last caller, I've noticed that in Nashville, too. It's because they have a building that looks like a head of the devil or something. The top of that building there, it's like a looks like some kind of satanic shrine. I don't know what it is, but it's pretty creepy. It looks like a building off of Ghostbusters or something like that.
Wow.
But yeah, I forgot what building it is, but in Nashville, if you look at the main skyscrapers there, check them out. There's one that looks like it has horns coming out the top of it or something.
Oh, my.
But yeah, well, I mean, I called in to disagree as far as the Civil War. Look, I don't care if you guys have monuments. I think that most of them were put up in the 20s. You know, they should not be torn down unless the people vote to tear them down. You know, you can't give in the mob rule. But I think the, you know, if you look at the Missouri Compromise and the Dred Scott decision and Texas coming in as a southern state, slave state, yeah, the Civil War was about slavery, clearly. And you know, one thing that proves that is after the war, how much longer was there slavery?
Well, let me ask you a question.
How many years after the Civil War?
Let me ask you a question. What was slavery about?
Slavery was about a bunch of rich people, half of them Jews, brought in a bunch of Negroes to, just like they do now with the Mexican labor, you know?
Okay, well,
those
people you talk about who were bringing in those slaves, were they Northerners or Southerners?
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. The North changed.
Oh, it does, too. It does, too. Don't tell me it doesn't matter. You're going to tell me someone who commits a crime, the person who commits it, it doesn't matter?
Well, most of them went to the South. That's why they had the Mason-Dixon line and the Missouri Compromise. The Southern
why did they go to the South?
To remain slave.
Why did they go to the South?
Maybe better agriculture, you know.
Well,
and it became legal there, and the North developed a Christian good culture where the South was a satanic
Wait a minute. You're going to have to prove this satanic thing because the North was teaching totalitarianism.
If you're sitting there with a bunch of Negroes chained up in your backyard, you're kind of satanic and kind of weird to me.
What about the ones who loaded all of those Negroes on ships and brought them to those people in the South?
Well, yeah, why don't you focus on that instead of trying to say it wasn't
because
about slavery?
Because I only have an hour here, I'm going to focus on both.
I think the Missouri Compromise clearly shows it was about slavery and the fact that slavery didn't exist after the Civil War.
Okay, what Supreme Court decision said that the Missouri Compromise was unconstitutional and slavery was legal?
I don't care. It was something people wanted
to get
rid of.
You don't care about what happened? You don't care about what happened, but you're going to babble on about it like you know something?
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously about slavery.
Slavery is about money. Slavery is about money. Southerners did not buy 200 to 300 slaves for pets.
The North was making it illegal. The South wanted to keep it legal.
The South was, the North
the
did not make
decision.
It illegal. You are wrong. Yeah. The South never made it illegal. Tell me where the North made it illegal.
What was the Missouri Compromise then? States were going to remain slave states.
Have you read the Wilmot action?
Well, you're avoiding my question. What's the Missouri Compromise? Look it up.
I know what the Missouri Compromise is, and I'm about to answer that question with a question. Tell me what the Wilmot Directive said.
I don't care. I'm just looking at the
Missouri
Compromise.
The only thing you care about is what you agree with.
Well, you're
Let's move
trying
to the next
to
caller,
the
please. Move to the next caller, please. Hey, Murr.
Hi, Michael.
How are you, youngin'?
Good. Yeah, let's just get this a little bit straight here a bit here. Aaron Lopez, who was a Jew, did most of the freight. The freight was Negro slaves, and that was in Rhode Island. The one colony, the one state that didn't want to go along with Christian principles and God. Okay, and so you had Jonas Phillips from the Philadelphia Synagogue put the kibosh on it by sending a letter to Washington. There will be no test of religion. And Jerry Nadler, just very recently said that. There will be no test of religion. So no one took the oath to God like they used to do.
Well, thanks, Murr. Let me get in this point here, since I'm talking to you, that will answer Dan's question in Washington, because he don't care. He don't care that the Northern Congress, an Indiana congressman, wrote that we need to keep the West slave-free because it needs to belong to white people. We don't want any blacks in the West and the North and the Northern part. That was the Missouri Compromise, was to keep blacks out of the country as blacks, not as slaves.
Right. But the Jews in the Northeast that took over many square miles of land from the Indian people there had slaves. Sojourner Truth came from there. Okay, so we're just told so many lies, and lies of omission are the worst, but what I wanted to say was I found the article you were talking about, and found it under encyclopediavirginia.org, and from that article and where it was printed. And I also have a chat room for you, rebelmadmanradio.chatango.com, and it's posted in there. And, it really shows that we have good intent and adults if we can say, I don't know, rather than I don't care.
Well, I agree with that totally. And for someone to call up and try to make historical points and then to say, I don't care about yours, which are historical documented points, I don't care about yours, I only care about mine, is the epitome of why we're in this damn mess.
Well, I just want to say I like Dan, and he used to call Stormfront, and he has some good arguments and some good ideas. But he did this. This is the third time just today that he's called a show and didn't care because the points weren't being made that he knew about on different topics.
The other thing, Murr, that I would like to think about here is that we talk about who financed these slaves.
Bankers, the Jews.
There were no Southern banks.
Right.
Okay, when the Northern bankers financed and these are in official documents, like for Wade Hampton and other people that they were financing these slaves for, the purchase of slaves, what did the Northern bankers demand as collateral, Murr?
I don't know, land?
Slaves.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yep. The slaves were the collateral. And for someone to say it wasn't about money is off the rocker.
Yeah, we're all fiscal slaves instead of physical. Although now that we're fiscal, we're also physical. Because the only value is labor. And
yes.
80% of the owners of slaves were Jews. There were not that many people that could afford to, you know, they might have a few, but like you said, they're precious equipment, you know? And you'd more often have indentured Irish that they're indenturing. The bite would go on forever and ever. They were slaves, too, but they were expendable.
Oh, very much so.
The rednecks.
Well, Murr, appreciate you, lady. Thanks for doing that chat room. I really appreciate that. And thank you so very much.
Well, thank you.
And all of the folks here, Jim Ram, DW, Steve Whitener, they're all said to say hello to Murr.
Oh, good. So Daryl Wayne and Jim Ram did make it. Good, good, good.
Yes, they did. We've had a fantastic time. We had a really nice meeting in a motel room last night when Jim Ram got there. We had never met each other before. Either DW or myself had ever met Jim, and that was a very nice conversation. We flat enjoyed it.
Oh, great. Nothing like meeting in the flesh.
Absolutely. Okay. Thanks, Murr. Appreciate you, girl. Thank you so much.
Go ahead and finish what you were going to say. I'll get off. Finish what you were going to say. Thank you.
I thought I saw something flash across my screen, but I wasn't sure. Do we have any other callers waiting? Okay. Well, thanks, Murr. Let's move to the next one. All right, Mitchell. Welcome, Mitchell.
What's going on?
You are.
Hey, listen, you had referenced Lysander Spooner. Lysander Spooner there's a really interesting quote. I'll read it real quick. But whether the Constitution really be one thing or another, this much is certain, that it has either authorized such a government as we have had or has been powerless to prevent it. In either case, it is unfit to exist. Would you agree with that? Sentiment, or would you agree with Lysander Spooner?
Absolutely.
I do too.
I've agreed with that for the better part of 40 years now, especially when I saw what was the fraud of the first convention. That the first convention was not the one that got us the Articles of Confederation, but the one that brought us the Constitution was fraudulent, it was criminal, and as a sentinel who was Samuel Bryan, anti-federalist, he documented it very well. That it was a criminal conspiracy. Why else, if you were trying to build something good for the people, why else would you secret yourself away in a building for 3 months and put windows over the door and guards at the window so nobody could know what you're doing?
Well, it's interesting, and I was reading, obviously you're going to be familiar with the Constitution, what is it, the sixth essay that he wrote?
Yes.
No treason?
No treason, yes.
And it's amazing because he comes right out of the gate and says, I'll read a portion of the first paragraph. The Constitution has no inherent authority or obligation. It has no authority or obligation at all unless it's a contract between man and man. And it does not so much as even purport to be a contract between persons now existing. You know, and he goes on and talks about historically that only a small portion even of the people then existing were consulted on the subject or asked or permitted to express either their consent or dissent. You know, we're always told that we consented to this. And here's a man in 1867 He was there.
Yep.
He was there. He was saying, nobody consented to this. Nobody consented at all.
Let's throw the point in for Mr. Spooner, too. He was a rabid abolitionist.
Yeah, but it's amazing that he's not taught in school. One of the RBN hosts, somebody asked me that if they had heard of Lysander Spooner, and the guy said, no, I never heard of him.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
I mean, these Spooner quotes are as good or better than any of the founding fathers, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, here's another thing. I didn't know if you were familiar with it or not, but the legislature of the state of Pennsylvania stated publicly in a document that the 8 delegates that they sent to the Constitutional Convention did things they were not authorized to do, and therefore they did not have permission. And that is in an official document that the delegates from Pennsylvania, who were very much involved in the writing of the Constitution, that the people of the state of Pennsylvania withdrew their consent for them to do that.
Wow. Well, the thing about the Constitution, so what the point now is moving forward, what do we do?
Well, I think the first
thing, the 14th Amendment was not legitimately ratified, was it?
No, neither was the 16th or the 17th.
There's all this discussion about affidavits and so on and so forth, but to be honest, all this affidavit and this process is based on a particular interpretation of the 14th Amendment. To be honest, the 14th Amendment was not even legitimately ratified.
Well, that's been one of my points on this affidavit nationalist thing. I have been my point from the beginning. If you file any paperwork on the 14th Amendment, citing the 14th Amendment, you guarantee to the government the right to create amendments out of thin air.
So you're saying that the affidavit is not a good, it's not a good procedure.
No, I didn't say that. I have that citizenship status myself and have had it for quite some time. But I'm telling you, when you look at it objectively, it does some good things, but there's some things it doesn't. For the people in this country to sit around and tell people, if you've got an affidavit, the IRS is not going to come seize your property. If you have an affidavit, your church will not be raided and burned. If you have an affidavit, you won't go to prison, because there's a lady among the January 6th people who cited in her first appearance in court in a bond hearing that she was she had a affidavit and she was a citizen, a national citizen, and or a state citizen, I'm sorry. And the federal judge says, I don't give a damn what your status is. That's documented as well.
Well, the problem I have with it also is that the people who have been foisting this upon we the people, when are they ever going to be held accountable?
Not.
See, there seems to be no accountability for any of this stuff going on.
Well, I surely enjoyed this. I hope you'll call back again in the future. Let me try to jump to at least one more caller before we run out of time. But thank you so much. I appreciate it. Alan in Texas. Alan, we got a few minutes here. Let's jump on it.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. Gaddy. Actually, good to hear your voice. I've been listening to you for years. You know, you've been part of my learning process. But, you know, every time I heard you talk about, you know, going into the, you know, the halls of Congress, you know, the Library of Congress and the National Archives. And every time I hear someone say that, you know, I can't help but think about a guy named Sandy Berger. You know,
you mean the ones
who went in and was caught out coming with DVDs in his BVDs and Docs in his socks, you know? Do you think the truth about the Clintons is actually in the National Archives anymore? You know, think he was the first one that did that? He was just the one that we know that got caught.
So, well, that may be true, but the government had no need to remove, if the government would have needed to remove these documents that prove the Constitution was a fraud, they would have done it a long time ago.
Oh, I know. And you know, I agree with you. You know, did we ever actually break away from Britain? You know, was the whole thing a sham?
I don't think so.
A way to extract the wealth of our country. You know, the best slave is one who believes himself to be free. You know, was the whole thing a sham? My friend, all we can do is take the information that we can, try to figure out the truth as best as we can. But, you know, when you think you know the whole truth, that's when you need to sit down and think to yourself, it's like, I wonder what the truth really is.
Because
all we can do is the best we can.
Well, that's one of the things I love about RBN here. We're trying to pursue the truth as hard as we can.
Yes, sir, my friend. You know, but you know, I like I said, you know, every time someone mentions the National Archives, Sandy Berger pops into my mind. He lost his law license for 2 years, and I'm sure he's back in the senior executive service or somewhere doing some nefarious crap.
Oh, absolutely. He's in politics, isn't he?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Politicians aren't known for doing good stuff.
Good to hear you back on RBN. Good to hear your voice again. Been listening to you for a long time.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Do we have time for one more caller here, guys? All right, Mike.
Are you back? Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, this is Mike in Kentucky. I didn't hear what you said, if the big burst of static knocked it out, but look for the distribution of slaves map of 1860 census. There's huge swaths of the South that don't have slaves, like half of Florida,
right.
Most, two-thirds of Missouri, all of northwestern Arkansas, huge swaths of Tennessee to the east, the western North Carolina, the entire so-called state of West Virginia did not have slaves, and the vast majority of eastern Kentucky from the Danube National Forest east, virtually no slaves.
Right.
So the idea that you could motivate non-slave owners to fight in that Civil War for the rich man's slaves is silly.
Amen, brother.
Well, that's how you have to put. The audience relevance works for the Bible, too. When you put your mind in the, try to put yourself in the setting of what those people were in, that culture, that time, that the economics, how do you motivate the vast majority of those soldiers to go fight?
Oh, absolutely. It has to be emotional, and that is the point today. I will stop people on the street, and I will say, I'm doing a survey. Could you answer for me, please? Would you send your children, or would you go off personally and go fight a war so some rich person could own something you can't?
Have you ever listened to Mike Rivero's All Wars Are Bankers' Wars? And try to
yes,
it apart?
I have. Yeah, I have.
Okay. Well, you know, Jackson, of course, was trying to get us out from underneath of that second Bank of the United States.
Yes.
And, of course, the Missouri Compromise was, 1820? And what you mentioned earlier, the Wilmot Proviso was attempting to cancel that out.
Right.
You can't. You got to have blinders on to say that the war between the states, if you want to call it that, or Lincoln's War of Northern Aggression, whatever you want to call it, it was just about slavery is silly.
It definitely was about slavery because slavery is about money. I think part to say it's about slavery, you have to say, well, slaves didn't exist if there wasn't money. They certainly wouldn't have sent ships to Africa to get slaves as pets.
Well, that's the other thing. That's the other thing. It wasn't just African slaves.
Right.
I mean, I suspect some of my ancestors were simply thrown out at Savannah because nobody would buy them. And Charleston, South Carolina had a huge contingency of Jewish people. European countries wanted to get rid of their poor, and America was a great dumping ground, and so was Australia.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. You got nailed on. Thanks so much for the call.
Okay.
No, I thought I heard music. You're good. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if you were kidnapped or taken into custody by the sailors and the captain of a ship in Europe, you were the property of the ship's captain. So that's all they had to do is get you off the street, have a sailor pick you up. You know, there's an episode of Bonanza where that happens. They got shanghaied.
I remember that. Well, there's the music. Thanks for the calls, guys. Really appreciate it. Support RBN. See you next week. Rebel Madman Radio.
How did we ever go so wrong? Did we get too high? Did we sleep too long? Why did we raise the price of gasoline? I remember the morning the towers fell. I fell back asleep.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.